This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Future Farm Botanicals Liquid Wild Oil of Oregano with rosemary extract and natural honey flavor. Future Farm's Wild Oil of Oregano supports a variety of healthy benefits, including antimicrobial effects, as well as supporting the immune system. Plus, Future Farm is the first ever to formulate Wild Oil of Oregano with rosemary. Rosemary aids circulation, helps alleviate muscle pain, improves memory, and also gives your immune system a boost. The natural honey flavor enhances the taste while still giving you all of the benefits. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Wild oil of oregano is all natural, science-based, and works without adverse side effects. MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast, and it's a momentous first for our Intelligent Medicine Podcast because today we're doing a Facebook Live event. So hello to all of you out there who are following us on Facebook Live. Mm-hmm. We appreciate your time and your attention. And let's introduce ourselves. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. This is Layla Mudin.
Hello, everybody.
And Layla is our nutritionist in residence. She joins me each week for a weekly Q&A with Layla podcast, which is among our most popular podcasts. Some mm-hmm. of you who are watching us on Facebook Live, you probably are familiar with the format because we answer questions that people send in. Radio program at AOL.com is the destination for questions.
And yes, and we appreciate them. Do send them.
Yep. And intelligent medicine means the best of natural therapies, the best of high tech. We put those all together for people in each and every podcast. But in particular, Q&A with Layla, we try to take an intelligent medicine approach to your questions. So let's explain a little bit the setup here.
Yeah.
What you're seeing, the background here is where it all happens. This is my home studio, and this is where I broadcast my radio program Saturdays from noon to 2 p.m. Eastern Time is when we broadcast live. And I use, you know, virtually the same apparatus to record my radio program. We are doing Facebook Live. We have a cameraman who's, diligently holding the camera on us today. although we could have a robo camera, but we have even better. We have a live human being.
It wants portrait, not landscape, huh?
Yeah. Alan is from our production office at Media Management Group. And this is actually the way we do it, you know, so let me explain. Pretty amazing. This microphone here is, you know, it's actually even superfluous. This is what I use to broadcast some of my podcasts with. But with this device, which is called an iPhone, a simple iPhone 10.
Or a smartphone, yeah.
I don't know if you can see, but you see these little tracings. These tracings are our voice imprint on the phone. We use little lavalier mics.
Yes. Right
point
here.
To your lavalier mic.
Right here.
And we're simultaneously doing a Facebook Live as well as an Intelligent Medicine podcast, mm-hmm. which is not heard live, but which will be posted tomorrow, mm-hmm. and you can hear it in its entirety. So if you're really a nut for punishment, you can watch the entire Facebook Live, and then you can hear it again.
Yes.
When we post it, and then we inventory them at drhoffman.com. So we have a vast inventory of programs, but this is among the most popular.
Right. And click on listen and you can download
indeed.
All the podcasts.
So, with that being said, we actually had dinner tonight mm-hmm. Before this because usually we record these in the office. Sometime in the afternoon.
Right.
But we decided that we wanted to make this more available to people, later in the day, mm-hmm. because who's listening at, 3 o'clock in the afternoon? Retired people or students or people with a flexible schedule, but this has seemed to be a more convenient time. So 7 o'clock Eastern time. Sorry about that for you folks in, Hawaii, or on the West
right.
Coast. And then it's a little late for
or
you.
Or in Europe.
Or in Europe, you European listeners, you people in...
my sister's sleeping.
London, Prague, Geneva, you know,
right.
Berlin. We know we have some listeners out there. And for those of you who are in Asia, forget about it.
You know,
it's
right,
a
right.
really crazy time.
Just go to drhoffman.com and download it and listen to it.
If you have insomnia and you're, you know, in Beijing, you know, right. maybe you can listen.
Take some melatonin, but okay.
Yeah, so... So just we were discussing at dinner, you know, I just got back from the American Nutrition Association conference.
Mm-hmm. On the West Coast.
On the West Coast. Mm-hmm. I was in San Diego. And, you know, the theme of the conference was environmental toxicity. And so you might think, well, you know, this is the American Nutrition Association. Why are they going, you know, why are they talking about environmental toxicity? You know, this is, seems afield from their mission. You know, we could be mm-hmm. talking about, you know, the what's the best diet? Is it a vegan diet versus a carnivore diet or a low-carb diet or... you know, what are all the different diet permutations, paleo and so on. Mm-hmm. Why talk about environmental toxicity? But it's so important when it comes to our food supply, right?
Yes.
Because there's so many perils in our food.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so we had dinner.
Yes.
So Layla ordered the tuna.
I ordered the mercury.
You ordered, so you'll have some mercury. So I decided.
I ordered the tuna.
Right. And so I decided I was going to opt for some PCBs. I had the salmon instead. So it makes you a little paranoid about the food. But
right.
I think we really need to be paying attention to the environment.
Yes.
We need to be paying attention to our food choices.
Mm-hmm.
We need to also push back politically against some things that are allowed mm-hmm. and condoned. GMO foods, for example.
Yes.
I know this is a controversial issue, but more and more persuasive information was shared with us at this conference from really top research scientists about the mm-hmm. deleterious effects of glyphosate, which is the Roundup ingredient. And, you know, short of these lawsuits, these like, you know, $500 million, billion-dollar lawsuits.
Yeah, that billion-dollar one is
because
something.
The reason for that settlement was not just so that poor person who got the cancer got the money. It was actually punitive damages because it was, in the trial, it was really brought out that Monsanto had really concealed this information about the toxic effects of mm-hmm. glyphosate. And so that's why you get these mega million damages. But, you know, even if you don't get non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, there's some pretty profound deleterious effects of glyphosate.
That's true. One of them being, for those of you who have gluten sensitivity, even celiac disease, but more gluten sensitivity, gluten intolerance, that may be exacerbated or even brought on by the use of glyphosate in the food that you're eating, in the wheat crop. Or any other foods
right,
that are being grown.
So this is
and
the
sprayed with glyphosate.
It's like, you know, they say we used to eat Roman meal bread. You know, remember that? There was Roman meal bread, which was the whole grain bread that we had in the 50s and 60s. And the pitch line was gladiators ate this. And gladiators, they were in good shape. Mm-hmm. They didn't even get much meat, but they had this gruel that was made, some kind of porridge made out of Roman meal.
Mm.
So they subsisted on that, and they didn't do so bad. They weren't like, you know, developing celiac disease then. So maybe it's not the wheat per se,
yes.
but it's some of these other things like...
Yes, but like the glyphosate.
Glyphosate.
Like the glyphosate.
Now you may say, well, but wheat, that's not GMO. How come there's glyphosate on wheat?
Well, it's to spray. It's an herbicide. They want the wheat crop to grow, not to die due to pests.
Right.
So it's an herbicide and weeds.
But they also use it at the end of the growth cycle of the wheat to... It arrests,
as a desiccant.
It arrests their... growth.
Yeah.
And it is a desiccant.
It makes the harvest
easier.
It makes it easier for the farmers.
Yeah. It helps them separate the wheat from the chaff, literally.
Right. Right.
So it makes it easier to harvest. So that even things that are non-GMO are mm-hmm. liberally sprayed. And this actually may be, you know, when we talk about the wheat belly diet and people with gluten-free diets, why people lose weight mm-hmm. disproportionate to their reduction in carbs, because it's okay, you know, you don't have as much wheat. But you may have carbs elsewhere. People lose scads of weight all of a sudden. Maybe due to the favorable return to normalcy of their microbiome.
Of the microbiome, the gut, all of that. So glyphosate is important to pay attention to in terms of toxicity. Yeah.
So, you know, we usually start with a bit of a prelude before.
And these toxins are also obesogens.
They're obesogens, right?
They're obesogens. So they're adding to.
They gum up the chemical works. I mean, yeah. The statistics show that Americans are getting fatter and fatter and fatter.
And metabolism is sluggish.
More and more metabolic syndrome, prediabetes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, is it just that we're eating more and exercising less? You know, if you look at the typical 19th century meal, they ate a lot of, you know, grits and a lot of potatoes and things like that. They ate carbs. Were they exercising that much? Well, nobody went to gyms in those days. I mean, they walked a lot and they did physical manual work. But maybe it's the obesogens in the environment that are contributing.
Yes.
They literally gum up the cellular works and they create insulin resistance. So generally we start these sessions with a little bit of a preamble. That went a little long. Let's just get to questions.
Questions here. We have an email from Marty. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I've been a listener of your fine podcast for several years and look forward to your show each day while working out at my gym. FYI.
That's a good way to, you know.
Yeah, it's a great way. I know a lot of listeners are doing all that. You're on the treadmill, you're out running, anything like that.
And we would want listening. It that way.
Absolutely. FYI, I'm a 71-year-old male, 6 feet tall. I weigh 175 pounds. I have a couple
perfect.
Of questions.
That's
it is
pretty,
perfect.
Pretty
that's,
good.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
I have a couple of questions regarding sleep. How much sleep is too much? I average 8.5 hours per night. Is a 30-minute nap each day too much when I get 8.5 hours sleep at night?
Okay. So the answer is it's all relative.
It is.
And, you know, some people are long sleepers and some people get away with less.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the average American is chronically
sleep deprived. Yeah.
And
many are averaging 4.5 hours or so.
Yeah. And, you know, we tend to think, well, 6 hours, that's good. For a lot of people, that is really insufficient.
It is.
And we may think 8 or 9 hours, like this individual who possibly is retired or semi-retired, you know, has the luxury of sleeping more, but that's really to the good.
Yeah.
So there is, however, a phenomenon of oversleeping.
Yes, and that could work against you. It's almost like a U-shaped curve.
You
know, too little, you're at risk, and then too much, you're at risk.
Mm-hmm.
And so the magic number for most adults, we're talking adults now, we're not talking teenagers, children, elderly is a little bit of a different story. They tend to have shorter sleep cycles.
Mm-hmm.
For most adults, it's between 6 and 8 hours of sleep per night. Most people generally do well.
But, you know, adolescents, you know, even like teenagers, they require more sleep.
They do.
Than 25-year-olds.
Oh, yeah.
And unfortunately, the vast majority are not getting that, or they go into the bedroom with this. You know,
with
the social media, with like the Snapchat
the device,
and the this and the that and the other thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then they respond to it in the middle of the night. You know, it's like, oh, my God, I got to go.
Right.
Oh, look at this post. Oh, that's funny. Oh, it's like, oh, cat video.
Yeah. You know. Lest they should miss something that's going on need to be tuned into.
One of my friends is awake. It's like,
wow.
Are you awake too? Hello.
Right. Yeah. And not only is this a detriment, but also school schedules. They're getting up. It's dark in the morning at this time of year, and they're in school by 7:30.
So yeah, one of our guests actually talked about the sleep later, or the start later program for schools.
Which is a good idea.
Because kids need more sleep.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have to start early to begin with, and they have these extracurricular activities where they show up a little, or, you know, like at 6:30 or 7. Mm-hmm. It's dark, they're tired, they're not really learning, you know.
Right.
It's to their detriment. And,
and it
even does things like it makes them fatter.
It does.
Because it can create insulin resistance.
It does. When we're sleep deprived, cortisol, a very important stress hormone, goes up.
And appetite hormones go up.
Oh, yeah. We're craving carbs. We're craving carbs. Add to that the school program of, I did part of my dietetic internship 100 years ago at the Board of Ed. The breakfast was cereal with a bagel and cereal with a bagel. I know if I eat a breakfast like that, I'm not going to learn that day. I may want to turn around and go back to sleep, right?
Indeed, yeah.
So
to answer his question.
Yeah.
I mean, it kind of depends. It sounds about right for this guy.
Yeah.
But, you know, if he's tired, you know, you could actually sometimes feel a little sharper if you curtail your sleep.
That's true.
Okay? Now, this is an interesting sidelight, is that I've read recently some work on depression.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the ways to snap people out of depression is to sleep deprive them.
Huh.
Yeah, it's a little sleep starvation.
Can snap them out of it.
But there's probably certain subtypes of depression that we have to identify clinically, mm-hmm. or maybe even in the future there'll be like biochemical tests to determine, do you have that type of sleep problem? Because frankly, as people get older, they don't have a structured thing. You know, they fall asleep in front of the TV at, 6 o'clock. You know,
they wind up sleeping for an hour and a half, which is an entire sleep cycle, by the way.
Yeah.
And that would be a detriment to your...
It disturbs their nighttime sleep.
Yeah.
And, or they just hibernate.
Right, right.
And
Marty wants to know, is his 30-minute nap each day too much when he's getting 8.5 hours of sleep at night?
That sounds like it could work. It could work.
A little siesta is
good.
As long as it's working for him and he feels sharp after a 30-minute nap. And by the way, we wouldn't recommend a nap of longer than 20 to 30 minutes because it will interrupt your nighttime sleep.
Yeah, and that's when I nap, and sometimes I take a luxuriant nap. A typical time for me to nap, by the way, is after my radio show.
So I get
up early, I exercise, I do my show. It's like,
you know,
I feel a little
stress
drained.
Relief.
It's like,
stress relief, yeah.
Ah, my weekend is beginning.
Decompress.
Yeah, and but it's so blissful.
Yeah.
You know, and then, but I have to make sure that I sleep in a little bit of an uncomfortable position so that it's not like a real,
But Dr. Hoppen, because it's a Saturday, you can call it a disco nap because you're getting ready to go out. It's Saturday night.
Party.
Right. Oh my goodness. Marty has a couple more questions, if we may indulge him.
Okay.
Marty says, also, am I doing any harm to myself by spending 20 minutes in a dry sauna after my workouts each day?
It's awesomely
good.
In fact, it's one of the best ways to detox.
Yeah.
Is sweating.
Yeah.
And in fact, there are also blood pressure benefits associated with saunas.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, much of that research comes from Finland. You know, it's like
sauna's a treat there.
Yeah, it's like the chocolate research comes out of Switzerland. You know, the soy research comes out of China.
Right.
You know, the
dairy research comes out of Wisconsin.
The wine research comes out of the University of Lyon,
right,
in France.
Oh my goodness. So, Marty, I would remind you, you're 20 minutes in a dry sauna. You need to hydrate.
Right.
Very important after your workout, during your sauna,
bring
even,
in a bottle of water.
Or after.
Please
bring
not
in
a plastic
bottle.
Water. Plastic
yeah,
bottle.
Not
because
a plastic
you don't want
bottle.
To be drinking from the hot
yeah.
plastic bottle. And
exactly.
Leaches.
They've got those glass bottles now where you can add a slip
you
or
see
the
one of
aluminum.
Those over there, you show it. Yeah, go.
Right.
Can you grab it without pulling out a wire here?
I might pull out a wire here, but your phone might want to follow me.
Okay.
Let's see.
Here
we go.
Yeah.
Oh, go green.
Go green. I got this while diving in the Dominican Republic. It's
there you go.
So, it's an interesting story behind this.
Hmm.
This was our pay for a dive where we didn't have to pay for the dive. It was a free dive.
Mm-hmm.
And we got a bottle afterwards. And it was a cleanup dive where we actually cleaned the coral.
Hmm.
They gave us little brushes and little bags to take the coral. I mean, we took the algae off the coral. We didn't want to damage the coral.
No. Nope.
So what happens is coral doesn't grow as well when there's algae all over it. So we sort of, delicately, we spent 40 minutes underwater and we cleaned up the coral
mm-hmm.
because they're trying to restore the coral reef down there. So they had actually a coral farm on little scaffoldings. And it was growing, but threatened with encroachment from algae, which gets in the way. So that's the story. So these bottles are...
Nice bottle.
I guess, it's aluminum, but it doesn't really... I think it's pretty stable. It doesn't leach into your system.
Right.
So.
Anything's going to be better than plastic.
So there's...
Glass is another
already
opportunity.
Already FaceTime has paid off because this prop would not have worked on the radio.
Right? Oh, well, there you go.
Okay.
Oh, Marty has a final question. He says, my wrists are...
What is it, this Marty? He's got all these questions.
I know, Marty. And it's our first Facebook Live, and you're getting all the attention so far.
You know, on radio, we go, look, one follow-up question, you're done.
Right.
All right, we're being generous to Marty.
Yes. He says, finally, my wrists are getting thinner, and I would like your take on what I can do to prevent further thinning. Can you suggest any particular exercises?
He should do wrist augmentation surgery. No,
oh, my.
I'm kidding. There's no such
thing. Well, we're in an office of plastic surgeons. That may be available.
I'm not sure. It's going to happen. We all suffer from some degree of sarcopenia.
Mm.
And so I don't really know what to say there.
You know,
I don't know of any, supplement that builds,
Right. Massive wrists or...
I suppose you could do forearm weight exercises, but what would it do to the wrist?
You know, maybe give you carpal tunnel or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, you know, otherwise you could have Popeye forearms
I think you could take growth hormone or something, or, you know, GH. And then that's like, you know, with the baseball players whose hat sizes get bigger, you know.
Oh, my.
Normally the wrist doesn't grow. I think what he's talking about or doesn't shrink. It's just the flesh around there is becoming, you know, subcutaneous fat kind of disappears
as you
age. That's why you get that saggy, you know, facial stuff.
Yes. And so, thinning skin kind of adds to all of that.
Marty, we thank you for your questions. But we're done. We're done.
Thank you, Marty.
Okay.
Oh, okay. So... we've got a question here from MY. No name, just initials.
Okay.
I thought you might want to talk about this on podcasts, and it's an article from Live Science. Drunk man actually had auto-brewery syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
A man kept getting drunk without using alcohol.
Yeah.
It turns out his gut brews its own booze.
Mm-hmm.
So this is
actually a rehash of an old story, unless there's another incidence of that.
Yeah.
But what you know, the story, as best I remember it, is that there was this guy, and he was, you know, sort of acting like drunk.
Yeah.
And you know, so they said, well, you know, if you keep coming to work like this drunk, you know, we're going to have to fire you. And he said, look, I'm not drunk. I don't know what it is, but I just feel like disoriented and intoxicated. And I used to drink.
Especially after a carby meal.
Yeah. I didn't even know if they made that inference. It was sort of like, what else did he eat? I mean, everybody eats carby meals. So they didn't even think it was a you know, particularly, notable departure from his usual routine.
Yeah.
So anyway, so it turned out he was married to a nurse. This is one of the original cases. So his wife distrusted him and said, look, we're going to put you in a metabolic ward in the hospital. I can arrange that. And then we're going to study you. And she thought, like, he's cheating. He's got a stash somewhere. But this way, we'll keep him honest. Well, he still had those symptoms. And he did the breathalyzer test, and they did blood alcohols. And they found that he had appreciable levels of alcohol. So they said, this is really crazy. What's going on? Oh, well... It turns out that he had a whopping yeast colony in his gastrointestinal tract.
Candida.
He was like a distillery, like, you know, like those, you know, Ozark Mountain bootleggers. And he was distilling alcohol in his gastrointestinal tract because all it takes is any kind of carb, any carb.
Yes.
You know, look at all the different boozes around the world. It's corn, it's wheat,
it's
potatoes, it's cactus in Mexico to make tequila, or mezcal or whatever they call it.
Yes, agave.
And, and you can take any carb.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, you can take maple syrup. You can take honey.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and you can... Okay.
You can take sugar and make rum.
Add to it yeast.
Mm-hmm. Fermentation.
CO2. You get a lot of belching and bloating because of the gas production.
Right, right.
But you also get alcohol produced, and it goes in your bloodstream, and you feel stoned. So anyway... So what they did is they gave this guy antifungal medications. Fixed it.
And that took care of the problem.
So I don't know if this is a
So he had a massive candida overgrowth.
Yeah. So this is actually something that I was checking out in the 80s and 90s. Is I had worked with a laboratory guy to use a very sensitive blood test for alcohol. And we wanted to give people like a glucose tolerance test, but like a starch tolerance test. We would give them starch, and we wanted to see if there was going to be an increase in the alcohol. It didn't work for most people. It was very individual. It's like some people have a big yeast colony.
Yeah.
And some people don't, so they don't have this auto-brewery. But, you know, you also get other things. You get aldehydes produced.
That's true.
And you get other compounds that a lot of people feel
That's loggy. From the detox of alcohol, actually. The aldehyde is actually a little more toxic.
Yeah. But people have other toxic byproducts of their bacteria.
That's true.
Or their yeast.
Right.
And this can cause them to feel crappy, you know. And that's why a lot of people who have the so-called yeast connection, they have like myriad symptoms.
Yeah.
They have brain fog, and SIBO can cause brain fog.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, this man, interestingly, he received a lot of antibiotics following a complicated traumatic thumb injury.
Bingo!
That's it, right?
Yeah.
That's causing the candida overgrowth in his gut.
I mean, we saw actually a woman today in the office
Yes.
who complains of fatigue And she has a chronic bladder infection. She gets tons of antibiotics.
Yes.
And we thought that she might have something like this. Not quite Otto Brewery syndrome, but she just feels like devitalized. And she's not that old. She was in her 60s.
She felt devitalized, fatigued. She also felt like she couldn't remember things she used to. She was very foggy. Think about it. You know, you're having a couple of drinks. You're probably not remembering too well. So all of that kind of disconnect.
Before putting her on antifungal medication, I put her on some probiotic.
It's
Saccharomyces, which is something that actually fights a yeast.
It's a good yeast that fights the bad yeast.
It is a yeast itself.
Right.
It's
fighting Candida albicans.
Yeast against yeast.
Yeast against yeast.
The term they use in France. And where it originated, actually. It's from Indochina. The Saccharomyces was first discovered in Indochina. We'll see with her. And you put her on a diet. What kind of diet?
I put her on a Candida diet.
So she was eating some bread, right?
Yeah, she was eating bread. She was having potatoes. She was having fruits and things and so forth. And we
put her on a low-carb diet.
We put her on a low-carb diet.
So, I mean,
diet.
How would we treat it? We would treat it with maybe antifungal medications ultimately, but certainly a more benign way to treat it is with diet and with supplements.
We want to starve the candida.
We could use a product called Candibactin.
Yes, AR and BR,
right.
Which I know we start
slowly. Which is berberine and it's got oregano and
aromatic essential herbs. Oils, yes, which is very, very helpful.
Yep.
A natural fungicide that way.
Okay.
So I imagine she can look forward to feeling better soon. Okay. On all of that, but this is very interesting.
Well, you know, I'm looking at the timer here, and you know, we generally divide our podcast into two parts. So what we're going to do is we're going to pause for a few seconds and then resume. But those of you who are on Facebook Live, stay with us.